everyone. Welcome to episode 16 of Thomas and the Bible, starting another week on time, ready to go. Although it's a holiday, so I guess if there's anyone who listens to this at work, you probably missed this day or something, or have to catch up later. Or actually, no one listens to this, so it's okay. Except God. Except God above. Alright, we're on chapter 13 of Exodus today. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Sanctify unto me all the firstborn. Whatsoever openeth the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, it is mine. And so I sort of had to look up what exactly that means. I found out what it is that they had to, like, set their firstborn apart and not really get attached to the firstborn until you've offered him to God, and then God gives him back or something. And this is because God took away all the firstborn of the Egyptians, and so they're so grateful that he didn't take away their firstborn, so this is what they do. So just to get behind the logic of that, so because God murdered thousands of innocent people, we should be just so grateful to him that he didn't happen to murder our firstborn. And we're so grateful that we offer our firstborn up to him before we get attached. Needless to say, that's going to complicate, you know, the child's psychology and the relationship and everything. All because somebody didn't murder our child. This is horrifying. So the next time I decide not to murder your child, remember that I'm doing you a real favor and you should be grateful forever. Stupid. And Moses said unto the people, Remember this day in which ye came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Lord brought you out from this place. There shall be no leavened bread be eaten. This day came ye out in the month Abib, which I guess is like April, or I don't know, it's like between April and March or something. And it shall be when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he sware unto thy fathers to give thee, a land flowing with milk and honey, that thou shalt keep this service in this month. I love the idea that God or Moses or whoever is telling everyone that the land they're going to is, like, infinitely better, and it's full of milk and honey, and finally everything will be A-okay. Like, they're just going to another part of the same crap desert, right? Is it just me? They're going to some other sandy crap place with people who are going to hate them there. And as far as this location goes, if it weren't for the oil, no one would even give a crap about it, except maybe the people who thought that God gave it to them. But no one else would have the slightest bit of interest in all this region if it weren't for the oil. You know, God probably should have mentioned that. I will take you to the land of milk and honey, but that's crap because, more importantly, there are vast quantities of oil, which, trust me, you're going to want to use this later. 7 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall be no leavened bread be seen with thee, neither shall there be leavened bread seen with thee in all thy quarters. I love that one. No leavened bread be seen with thee. It's so funny. I feel like that could make for some really, like, tragic, you know, Romeo and Juliet story between a Jew and a piece of leavened bread. Like, Ishmael, I love you. What are you doing here? Oh, you know I can't be seen with you. Oh, if God found out, oh, let him find out. Look, you just have to wait a week or so until I can, you know, be with leavened bread. No, by then you'll be onto another loaf. You men are all alike. You know, Shakespeare could have written a great one about that. No leavened bread shall be seen with thee. No, he's not with me, I swear. And thou shalt shew thy son in that day, saying, This is done because of that which the Lord did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. And it shall be for a sign unto thee upon thine hand, and for a memorial between thine eyes, that the Lord's law may be in thy mouth. For a strong hand hath the Lord brought thee out of Egypt. Oh, and just to keep the recap going, pretty much God's just telling them how they're going to commemorate this stupid time when, you know, he didn't murder their firstborn, so they're going to do all this stuff to commemorate that. That's, it's not, details are unimportant. But it's funny to note that there are all these rules, like, you know, what day of the month you can't eat leavened bread and all this crap. It's just, it's hilarious to me. Hilarious and sad, I should add. And almost probably more sad than hilarious. All the time has been wasted. Thou shalt therefore keep this ordinance in a season from year to year. And it shall be when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of Canaanites, as he sware unto thee and thy fathers, and shall give it to thee. You know, actually, it's interesting when you think about the fact that none of this definitely did not happen. None of this bit. So they've been following all these bizarre and strict traditions to commemorate the time when nothing happened. It's again, probably more sad than anything, but also funny. That thou shalt set apart unto the Lord all that openeth the matrix, and every firstling that cometh of a beast which thou hast, the males shall be the Lord's. Man, so I guess all the cattle are committed to this too. Boy, they really are getting the short end of the stick. It's not like, you know, the Egyptian cattle and the Hebrew cattle were enemies or something. I don't really think they have, you know, cows and sheep have politics and stuff and hold grudges and all that. So, like, if you're a Hebrew cow, all your friends were just brutally murdered by God in Egypt, like all of them. And then the surviving, you know, you survive, and in order to commemorate the day with the, you're so grateful that God didn't kill you, you have to murder your you aren't, but I mean, these humans are murdering your firstborn sons. Man, poor freaking cattle. What do they do? And every firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb, and if thou wilt not redeem it, then thou shalt break his neck. And all the firstborn of man among the children shalt thou redeem. And it shall be when thy son asketh thee in a time to come, saying, what is this? That thou shalt say unto them, by strength of hand the Lord brought us out from Egypt, from the house of bondage. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that the Lord slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all that openeth the matrix, being males, but all the firstborn of my children I redeem. And keep in mind, the Lord is telling Moses all this, and I don't know if Moses, like, he's got, like, a word processor or even knows how to write or whatever, or if they even had anything to write with in the middle of the desert, but he just must be frantic trying to, like, okay, and the firstborn, so there's an animal, and we've got to sub the cattle for the sheep, and if it's an ass, then we can redeem the ass with a sheep, and then it's okay as long, like, man. I wonder if they just, like, God gave them some directions, and they just, like, made half of this crap up because they couldn't remember it. They're like, yeah, something about sheep, and I don't know, we'll just make it up, it's fine. And it shall be for a token upon thine hand, and for frontlets between thine eyes, for by strength of the land, by strength of hand, the Lord brought us forth out of Egypt. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God let them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest peradventure the people repent when they see war, and they return to Egypt. I don't know what that means. I guess the Philistines must have been at war, and so he didn't want them to walk near them, and they'd be scared and run back to Egypt. That's what it sounds like. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up harnessed out of the land of Egypt. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones away hence with you. And I find this sort of funny, like, oh, hey, Moses, not sure exactly how to broach this topic, but I couldn't help but notice in your backpack you've got some old crusty bones in there. What is that about? Oh, no, that's just Joseph. He didn't want his bones being bothered by those jerk Egyptians, so, you know, naturally I packed them up and I'm taking them with us. Oh, okay. So you don't mind carrying an old dead skeleton around with you everywhere? No, no. Keeps me company, you know, someone to talk to. And they took their journey from Succoth and encamped in Etham in the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud, like the lost smoke monster, to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire, to give them light to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night, from before the people. That's the end of that first little chapter. Moving on to the next one. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pihahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon, before it shall ye encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, They are entangled in the land, and the wilderness have shut them in. Ah, man, this Pharaoh just really won't learn his lesson. What is he thinking right here? So, I don't know if you caught that, but... So, God is telling them to park, like, right where the mountains and the ocean are trapping them. So, I guess pretty much to tempt Pharaoh to come after them. So, the Pharaoh is going to come after him, and, like, why? I mean... I know the Pharaoh is being controlled by God for this ridiculous whole thing, but, like, what must people of Egypt be thinking that the Pharaoh is thinking? Like, now I can try to, you know, harm them more so that they can put even more horrible plagues on us. Like, oh, it's so dumb. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, Why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? Oh, come on! Everyone in Egypt is freaking dead, and yet we're supposed to believe... that all of Egypt came and cried unto the Pharaoh, Hey, why'd you let those guys go? I don't get it. Oh, really? You weren't there for the 11 plagues that killed everybody in the entire land? And you still are you still wondering why you let them go? Stupid, stupid book. And he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. And he took... And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. And, so he took 600 chosen chariots. If you remember, they said there were over 600,000 Israelites. And they take 600 chariots. Somehow I don't think that's gonna work. Hey, you and that chariot. Okay, you heard those 1,000 people, you know, 1,000 plus people, herd them and get them over there and go get, like 1,000 people I think could pretty easily handle one chariot. I don't think that's going to cut it. And the Lord, again, this Pharaoh is such a fake character. Like anyone would be this stupid and thoughtless. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with an high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pihahiroth, before Baal Zephon. So they have a whole army and horsemen. Where is that even coming from? I'd like you to refer... no, you don't have to, but I'll do it for you. Chapter 9, verse 3. Of Exodus, the Lord killed all of Egypt's horses and cattle and sheep. And for the millionth time, barely anyone, if indeed anyone at all, could possibly be left over from all those plagues. I'd like to know what this army is eating now. What are they doing for food? Because there's a huge hail, there's locusts, there's pestilence. And those three things completely destroyed all the land-based food. And then just in case you thought maybe they could survive on fish, no, they were all murdered with plague number two. So Egypt is like that woman in Austin Powers 1 who keeps getting, like, shot with all these things and, like, killed and she just never dies. Honestly, at this point, I'm more impressed with Egypt's survival power than with God, I'd have to say. Impressive, because they don't have the benefit of being God. So somehow they're surviving all this stuff. And eating nothing. They're living on nothing. And marching out to go seek more abuse. Oh, it's so stupid. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? So the people are starting to bitch and moan, and I'm wondering, were they not there for the part where all the plagues happened? Surely they must feel sort of lucky to be alive and to be on Moses' side, yet they're going to start complaining? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will shew to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. But lift thou up thy rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry land through the midst of the sea. I just love God's attitude here is awesome. He says, wherefore, why are you crying to me? What are you asking me for? You know, because Moses started telling God that the people were complaining. And God says, you know, quote, wherefore criest thou unto me? essentially saying, what are you asking me for? Just to take your rod, divide the sea in two, and walk through it. Oh, do I have to do everything for you? Come on. When are you going to grow up and take a little responsibility, Moses? Duh, obviously. That's what you do. Like he's supposed to know somehow. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get me honor upon Pharaoh, and upon all his host, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten me honor upon the Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the angel... just to point out again, based on that language there, God really wants these Egyptians to know that he is Lord. And I think I might have to use this as a counterexample next time someone says, you know, well, God can't just come down and show himself and tell people he exists, because then that would be too easy, because you need to have faith to believe in him. No, this God in the Old Testament clearly wanted to be known. So either he's incompetent or this God is fake. Take your pick, as usual. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud, went from before their face, and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all night. All that's saying is that God is this smoke monster from Lost, and on one hand it gives light to the Israelites, and on the other hand it gives darkness to the other ones. That's all that said. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the how does the east wind help with that, by the way? I had to look for this a million times, because I thought, or look through it rather, I thought that maybe the parting of the Red Sea was sort of just a figure of speech, and what actually happened in the Bible was that he just like blew the sea over. Because it says, a strong east wind. I'm pretty sure you could make an east wind as strong as you want, and it's not going to part the sea, like, to make walls of water. But no, later it describes it, that's what happened. So somehow an east wind did that. Why even, I mean, God can do whatever he wants. Why does he need the east wind? He doesn't need any of that. He just do it. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground. And the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on their left. See, I told you. Somehow an east wind did that. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen, which don't exist again. And they're actually just riding. You've heard beating a dead horse? They're just riding dead horses. That's what they're doing. That's how they're doing that. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily, which I guess is like drove, so that the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians." You're just now figuring that out? After all the plagues and everything, you're just now figuring out that the Lord's maybe on their side. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again unto the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all that the host of Pharaoh came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. So everyone was just killed, all that army and the Pharaoh, by the way. And I'm pretty sure that if the Pharaoh of Egypt and an entire army and all the people, basically everyone's dead. If anyone who was still alive at this point is dead. And I'm thinking we would have some record of all of Egypt suddenly going extinct. Or at least their pharaoh dying, you know, like, oh. But no, there's no evidence. None whatsoever. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the shore. And Israel saw the great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. Yeah, that's real good work. Murder, mass murder. Good work. And the Lord, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. End of chapter 14. Moving on to 15. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. And spake, saying, "I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." So then they proceed to sing the worst song ever written. Because I guess it said they sing this song, and then there's this whole bunch of text, which I guess must be the lyrics of the song, because it just talks about, well, you'll see. It goes a little something like this. "The Lord is my strength and song, and he is become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation. My Father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war, the Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host hath he cast into the sea." And he... okay, I'll stop. Well, this clearly is the worst song ever written by humans, is it not? I mean, I guess it could be a translation thing, but still, it's like, it's just a description of what happened, and it doesn't... "The depths have covered them, they sank into the bottom as a stone." I'll just read it, I guess. "Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And in the greatness of thine excellency thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. Thou sentest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble. And with the blast of thy nostrils the waters were gathered together." He used his nostrils for that? Ugh. "The flood stood upright as an heap, and the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, my lust shall be satisfied upon them, I will draw my sword, and the hand shall destroy them. Thou didst blow with thy wind. The sea covered them. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. Who is alike unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? Hey, what the hell? Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? I think this is yet more evidence that they were really just polytheists back then. But, like, this god sort of got lucky, and maybe when they... This is my theory. I think that they had all these gods around, because it's been mentioned a number of times. They had idols, they have different gods, this line, you know. And I think what happened is that this one sort of just by... Just odds-wise, maybe they, you know, probability-wise, they happened to pray to this one when something went right, and so they sort of ran with it. And I think that would explain a lot in this early Bible, looking at it from the view that there are all kinds of gods, but they decided this is the best one. It really seems to me that fits. Thou stretchest out thy right hand, and the earth swallowed them. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth a people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided... Sorry, it's just so lyrical that I can't help burst into song. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold of the inhabitants of Palestina. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Hey, what? What did the freaking Canaanites do? So they're singing the song of praise. God is going to lead them out of Egypt where they were, you know, they were slaves. So God is just. He's going to lead them out of Egypt and help them murder everybody in Canaan and take their land. Like, that's... that. It is so obvious to me that this was just a... They were just using this god, fake god, as a justification for taking other people's land. It's just... It couldn't be more obvious. Okay, I guess it could be if they, like, said that. But, it's one step away from that. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm, they shall be as still as stone. Well, yeah, fear and dread probably will pass by them. Because for all they know, they're just hanging out, the Canaanites, that, you know, it's their land is going to get taken in a minute, I'm sure. I don't know that, actually. I haven't read ahead, but I that's what it sounds like. So they, of course, actually, it won't be fear and dread for them. They'll just be like, oh, hey, guys, what's going on? You know, and, murdered. Like, what? What did you do? It'll more be like, what? Okay. It'll just be like wonderment, bewilderment. You know, that these people for no reason are like this huge group of people is just going to come and take their land. They're probably like, they're probably not scared when they see them. They're probably like, hey, what the hell are those guys doing? Oh, they're coming this way. Oh, okay. You know, like, what did the Canaanites do? If it does go back to Canaan, you know, that whole Noah naked thing, I swear it must. I don't know any other justification for it. And if it does, it's really the stupidest thing that's ever happened. That they're going to just take these people's land because of some stupid, meaningless event that happened that wasn't even Canaan's fault. And it really wasn't even Ham's fault. You remember, Canaan is Ham's son. So, yeah, this is stupid. In case you haven't gathered that yet, this Bible is stupid. Fear and dread shall fall... Oh, no, I read that. Till thy people pass over, O Lord, till thy people pass over, which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. For the horse of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought them... brought again the waters of the sea upon them, but the children of Israel went on dry land. And I'm not recapping this because it is itself a recap of everything that's just happened in song form. And Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, Sing ye the Lord, to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went day 3 days. Oh, never mind. Okay, no. This isn't the song anymore. It's hard to tell. It all sounds the same to me. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Oh, they can't drink them because the water is bitter? I think if you're dying of thirst, you're not like, it's a little bitter. I don't know. I don't really want to drink this, to be honest. You know, you just drink it. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. Well, duh. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" How quickly they turn on Moses. And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord shewed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. So he throws a tree in the water, and the water becomes sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them, and said, "If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and wilt do that which is right in his sight, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee." And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water, and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. End of that chapter. Boy, that one was boring, wasn't it? And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Oh, come on, seriously? These people have witnessed God murder all of Egypt, and then witness him part a freaking ocean, and they are seriously going to bitch about food. 10 minutes into the, you know, like, I think at this point you pretty much have to trust that God has got it figured out. Like, he's keeping an eye on you. Like, God would have gone through all that and then just been like, "Oh shit, they all died? Damn it, I go to the bathroom for 2 weeks and they're dead? Ah. Oh, you know what? Oh, humans need food, don't they? Oh, that's it. Yeah. Oh, crap. Oh, well." Like, that's what they think God, you know, is thinking. Like, stupid. "Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, At even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land of Egypt." Well, no, they already know that. They're not in the land of Egypt. That answers that. "And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of God, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us?" And Moses said, "This shall be, when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord." So this is kind of hard to recap because it's really weird, but pretty much Moses is just answering. Well, God told Moses he'd provide food, and Moses is saying, "Stop complaining about me, because when you complain about me, you complain about God." That's pretty much all that happened. Oh, and Moses said they'll have food. "And Moses spake unto Aaron, Say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, Come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings. And it came to pass..." excuse me. as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, At even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. Didn't we already read this? And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay round about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoar frost on the ground. Well, that was H-O-A-R, by the way. Hoar. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, It is manna, two ends, for they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat. And they're like, this? These little round, you know, like, gopher turd pellets? This is it, huh? Okay. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man according to the number of your persons. Take ye every man for them which are in his tents. An omer is a unit of measurement, by the way, so that's what that word is. And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more and some less. And when they did meet it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. They gathered every man according to his eating. And Moses said, Let no man leave of it till the morning. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses, but some of them left it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank, and Moses was wroth with them. These guys are a bunch of idiots. They can't just listen to Moses by now. I mean, he has a pretty proven track record at this point involving death of people who are against him, you know? So, if I were there, I'd be, you know, if this was real, of course you got to listen to Moses and follow all these stupid orders. I mean, I know it's not real. It's pretty obvious it's not, but I mean, if you were in this and this was really happening, crap, yes, you're going to follow these orders. Stop questioning Moses, idiots. And they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating, and when the sun waxed hot, it melted. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Lord works a part-time job on Sundays. That's why he's got it. Or I don't know if it's Sunday. It's the Sabbath. I'm not sure which day that is. I'm pretty ignorant of all that. I assume it's Sunday, but could be Saturday. I don't even know. Could be Tuesday. Could be some day that happens between Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know. Tomorrow is the rest of the Sabbath of the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and seethe that which ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up until the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. This whole thing is friggin' weird. What is the point of all this? God makes sure that if they gather too much during the week, it grows worms, but if they gather too much on the day before the Sabbath, then that's okay. Like, what? It just seems like a lot of work. It's too weird to even make fun of. It's just weird. It doesn't make any sense. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. Sure enough. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So what's happened is, just to recap, although I think this has been pretty self-explanatory, but God's giving them all these weird gopher turd pellets for food. And they They go bad if you collect too much on a weekday, but if you collect too much on the day before the Sabbath, then it's fine. And also, there's not going to be any available on the Sabbath, because that's when God works his part-time shift at Starbucks, so he's not available. And these people still aren't listening, and so they went out and tried to collect them on the seventh day, and there weren't any, and so Moses, or God, was like, man, when are you going to start listening to me? I gave you twice as much on the sixth day so that you wouldn't have to go gather them on the seventh day. It's not that hard, people. Come on. So the people rested on the seventh day, and the house of Israel called the name thereof manna, and it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commandeth, fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a pot, and put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years, until they came to a land inhabited. And they did eat manna until they came into the borders of the land of Canaan. 40 freaking years of eating the same thing, day in and day out. I don't care what you're eating, you would want to puke after like a week of that. Also, what the hell took them so long? 40 years. I'm pretty sure you could walk around the earth in 40 years. What are they doing? I don't get it. Where are they going? Have they been walking around in circles? Just like, oh God, I've seen this bit of sand every day for the last 40 years. What are we? You know, I don't know. It's. And they survived on this same, you know, gopher turd pellet food for 40. You know what? I'm done. I'm done making fun of this. It's just, this part is just too easy to make fun of. I'm sick of it. Oh, and so there's one last line in this chapter 16, and it is the greatest way to end a chapter. So I'll just give you a bit of the line before, just to sort of work into it, and you can see what I mean. And they did eat manna until they came unto the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is the tenth part of an ephah. That's it. That's line 36, last line of the chapter. Now an omer is the tenth part of an ephah. Or ephah, or whatever. That's great writing. Great writing. They decide to go... They decided to have this whole chapter talking about omers. And then the very last line say, oh, shit, by the way. Oh, man, we already wrote the rest. I forgot to put this in there. Now an omer is the tenth part of an eph. Stupid. All right, I'm done. I'm so over this stupid part of Exodus. Thanks for joining me. As usual, send comments to comments@thomasandthebible. Or go to the website, which sucks. But it's still there. And you can comment on stuff or do whatever. Until tomorrow, we'll see you guys later.